So, Dan, what is MD?
Mic dysfunction.
What is MED, I should say?
Mic erectile dysfunction.
And could you explain that to us?
Yeah, Adam's mic over here looks like it's been aroused. And
it's
like hardvark style aroused.
Hardvark.
And so I'm trying to tell him, like, turn your damn mic towards your mouth. It's like, point it up at your forehead.
Your mic's ready to go. Put it towards the mouth.
Yeah. Well, there was the first non-four-letter word that made me worried about our rating. But so then he was giving me crap because mine doesn't stay pointed up very high.
Yeah, I reached over and I like grabbed the end of it to kind of point it up, and then it just whoop, went right back
down. Yeah, straight back to where it should be at mouth level. It's like training your dice. I've trained this mic to do exactly what it's supposed to do. For those of you that are tuning in to the show for the very first time, this is a bonus episode. All these bonus episodes are is just us sitting around behind the mics having fun, taking what John calls a mental number two, just what dumping out whatever's on our minds. These are not the way our show is normally conducted. They're not edited the same. They're not on the
They're
same
not edited
subject
at all.
So
except for the first three times when we cut that.
Yeah. So if you are tuning in to Fear the Boot for the first time, turn this off, download our most recent regular episode. That's what this show is normally like. Then come back and listen to this later just for the entertainment value. Now,
so what's our topic for today?
Our topic for today, last night, of course, we have on the mics, myself, Dan, Chad, Adam, and my brother, Tex.
Hello.
And hello.
You're not supposed to say hello.
You're supposed to make a hi.
That's right.
And, but I'm not really that suave, so I wasn't
What does
go,
everybody
hi.
Say? I go hi, and then what do you
I
say?
I usually say hey.
Hey, and then Dawn is like, hello.
She does say it that way all the time. Hello.
So you're saying I'm plagiarizing your wife's tagline?
No, you definitely didn't say it the same way.
Yeah.
Okay. Hello.
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 I feel like it's like a ringtone.
You know, hello, we should make that the new edit instead of the heart attack inducing beep. Somebody says something bad. It's like, so I was going down and the guy pissed me off and I was like, hello, you. Nah,
no,
that wasn't
That's
as funny
a great
as when
idea.
I first started.
Yeah, let's never
Yeah, we had
that
idea like 20 episodes ago too.
Well, and the original one we thought about for that was Kevin's, you know, woo. But that just never happened.
Yeah.
Silence worked perfectly until you started administering cardiac arrest with that.
Yeah, I'm the representative of the fat bastard community, and we have a problem with that.
Yeah, if anyone was constipated, having trouble moving, that got it out.
Slipping and a sliding.
Ironically, the comment that I believe brought on the first major beepage was Chad's wife's pregnancy.
Was it?
Was it?
Yes.
Wait, did I cuss?
No, probably me.
This is a great piece of Fear the Boot trivia that we don't even know.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm just a listener. I've just listened to all your episodes, and I seem to know more trivia.
You know, if we're ever at a convention, that would be a great game to play. Is like
stump the host?
Stump the host with trivia about our own show.
It'd be like, no! So in episode 38, you said blah, blah, blah. Sure.
Sure, and then the guy's like, you guys only have 34 episodes out.
Damn it!
Zing!
Give him a t-shirt.
I wonder if Fear the Boot fans are better or worse than Star Trek fans in that regard.
I don't know. They've called it, like on the forums, they've called us on things before. They said, you know, well, you said this in this episode, but back in episode 17, you said this. And we're like, what? We did? Then we have to scramble back and go and listen to it.
Well, as far as we are into this episode, and Dan hasn't brought up Venn diagrams yet, I suppose we could bring up the overlap between Fear the Boot fans and Star Trek fans.
Look at the armchair quarterback host.
Yeah. I thought you were a listener and not a talker.
Hey, can we please get down to brass tacks?
Oh, BRB.
You people just don't understand.
That's right. And this episode is never getting off the ground unless we put the rubber
to the
road.
I was going to use that one next.
You aren't qualified to use that one.
Apparently.
You know, not. I think you're only making that opinion, and I think you're really basing that on the fishbowl. I can go all night.
Try the veal.
Dip your waitress.
All right, the topic for today, for this particular bonus episode.
I think we're doing it.
Last night, Tex and I were visiting with my sister's husband, who's also named Adam. And we were talking to Adam because he did not really know what a role-playing game is. And that's not what the show's about. This is not an introduction to role-playing. But instead, the conversation we ended up on was comparing and contrasting the experience of playing a role-playing game.
So you're saying this guy has never played Battletech?
He's never played any role-playing game, period.
But no Battletech.
No, no Battletech either. In fact, when we sat down and explained to him what a role-playing game was, what he had in his mind was really something that's more like a...
Candles and pentagrams?
No, it wasn't that at all. It's more of a strategy game that he thought that, like, you had situation cards and you had little maps with miniatures.
Right, he had a
and...
combination of a tabletop war game and a card collecting game.
So he's saying something along the lines of, like, a complex version of HeroQuest.
With collectible cards.
With collectible cards.
Sweet.
Not a bad idea.
I play this game.
Huh.
Nice.
You know, actually, we're sitting here. I need to trace your mic. Which one of you is on three and which one you're on?
Don't edit this out,
you
by
told
the way.
Me
I'm not
to
going to.
That.
No, I know, but this is a bonus episode.
Well, I know you're not going to because you don't Sunday. Do edits.
Right. No, I do edit the bonus episodes if it's necessary. Yeah. I do the bonus episodes.
Because it's usually like one little cut. Somebody cusses.
Yeah, usually someone drops an F-bomb or whatever. All right, so we're talking about the difference between playing a role-playing game and playing a video game. And one of the things that we, let's just throw an example out there. One of the things that we talked about was within a video game, right now, just because of limitations within the artificial intelligence, you are typically confined to a very limited decision tree that you can only pick from one of three options in any given situation. And even in the sandbox games, and we'll talk about this in more depth here in a second, but even the sandbox games, while they're trying to overcome that, it still comes down to a very, very narrow, finite series of choices
in any situation. I think
the
sandbox game, you're even presented with less choices on a given situation. You can go to any situation almost at any time you want to,
right.
But when you get there, you can either choose to do it,
fairly limited.
Choose not to do it, or kill the guy.
Right. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. In fact, that's kind of what I was getting at, that the choice you have is not really how you relate to a given situation, but simply what order you take the situations in, or whether you choose to ignore some and focus on others. And we were talking about the difference between that and role-playing games, whereas in a role-playing game, within the confines of the rules and the confines of good game conduct, you can effectively do anything you want. That if you have a creative situation or creative resolution to a situation, that you can fire that away, and just because the game master didn't think about it doesn't stop you from doing it.
This is so interesting. Why are we putting this in a bonus? Shouldn't we be talking about beer and stuff?
But there are definite similarities, though, between like designing a computer role-playing game and GMing or preparing to GM a live role-playing session. For example, if you were preparing to GM a live role-playing session, you would still have to somewhat anticipate where your players are going to go, the experiences you want them to have, perhaps side quests or side adventures that you want them to have, and maybe anticipate the ways they would choose to react to that, just to prepare yourself as a game master.
Mm-hmm.
And designing a video game has very similar aspects there. The only downside is obviously once you've shipped a video game, you can't go back and do something extemporaneous if the player does something you didn't think of.
Right.
Yeah,
at
exactly.
least not with the main with sort of release of the game.
Yeah, and I have seen some of that where they try to anticipate what the players are going to do. I remember playing through, I believe it was Baldur's Gate 1, and Elminster keeps popping up offering cryptic advice and disappearing. And of course, I was playing this. You could play through the one-player campaign of Baldur's Gate with another person. Mm-hmm. You play it two-player. And we were playing through that where he had two or three of the characters in the party and I had two or three of the characters in the party. And every time he popped up, we were cussing him. And finally, in one of his appearances, one of the dialogue options even is, if you don't stop being so cryptic, I'm going to take that hat and shove it up your ass. Or
nice.
Something to that effect. I mean, it was more eloquent than that, but basically you went off on him.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the difference is you can't roll with everything. That I can recall, we had a role-playing game, for example, many years ago, where we were, Chad and I were both players, a different guy was GMing, and we were on this mining colony, and we were trying to accomplish something, I don't even remember what.
I don't even remember the game.
And Chad's character
really
beat some guy, like, literally to death. Now, of course,
I remember this game now.
Being a mining colony. Being a mining colony, they're all like real tight knit or whatever. So all these people come running up. And it's like, what have you just done? You know, ready to kill us all. Mm-hmm. And Chad just, I mean, on off the cuff, one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my entire life, says, I spit on the guy's corpse and say, he bleeped my wife. And one of the guys, all the miners, GM did not expect this. Mm-hmm. So he's like, well, okay, the miners spit on his corpse as well, kick him and walk away. And you don't have that.
Yeah.
You don't have that in a video game.
No, you don't.
Terrible.
Yeah, this is one of, looking at video game development, this is one of the things that I bemoan about where the money's being spent. That when you develop a game, you have so much budget to spend on all the things that go into it. And it seems like all the development budget and all the breakthroughs are in the graphics, the physics. You know, every week somebody's got a new video from their latest video game showing super realistic environmental interaction and bouncing skulls. And
here it comes.
I've been saying this for years.
But where is
my major beef with video games? I love video games. I think 3D rendering killed video games. And I say this because before 3D rendering, it's like you have so much money or so much, we'll just say resources, time, manpower, talent, money to put into a video game. You have so many resources to do it. So you take the large part of that and put it into the story, the gameplay, the feel of the game. And then you put the rest of it, what's left over, into the graphics. Because the graphic, you couldn't do much with the graphics. You can only take them to a certain level. Then 3D, you know, better graphics came out, 3D graphics came out, and the resources stayed the same. The money might have gotten more, but the scope of it stayed the same. You still had a certain amount of time and manpower and money to put towards a game, and they put more of the resources to graphics nowadays than they do to storyline. Now, of course, there's exceptions. But
look at how games are typically marketed. I mean, a game is typically marketed with screenshots, either on the internet or print media, and trailers and flash ads and banner ads, all of which are very visual. So if you wanted to advertise, our game has nuanced character development, it would be very difficult to do that.
I would run out and buy it in a minute.
True, well, that was the ads for Doom 3.
But in our soundbite society, he's right, though. In our soundbite society, it's hard to get the message out, and as a result, people don't try. Well,
so should a video game be designed by a marketing department, then?
No, I think corporations have been the death of the vast majority of creative endeavors.
Well, one of my coworkers has a similar lament, that he's a big audio guy. Mm-hmm. And because it's difficult to show off a game's audio in a screenshot or a short trailer or a banner ad or something in print media, that a lot of the newer games have some wonderful audio work that goes completely unnoticed because everybody just counts the pixels.
Right, right.
But you know what bugs me is, as I look at this, they just had a trailer released for Final Fantasy 13. It's a play clip. It's not even really a trailer. Mm-hmm. Where it's showing all the awesome physics and graphics. There was the portal thing that was all the rage a couple months ago, which I'll have to admit looks pretty cool. But all these things are these big, huge breakthroughs, these intellectual monsters that are all related to the graphics and the physics. Mm-hmm. When is the last time you heard somebody trumpeting a major, massive breakthrough in the AI? In, you know,
and not just the combat AI.
And I'm not talking AI, combat AI. I'm talking like the story AI, where, you know what, now suddenly, boom, we've done this huge breakthrough. And now we have a world that has no fixed plots, that
there is no such thing as a game with a story AI.
That the NPC,
there's a flow chart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the last one I can think of that even comes close to that is Fable.
You have,
and
and even in Fable, the NPCs had a measure of artificial intelligence as they went through their daily events and they could interact with you and each other, but that was still not dynamic to the side quest or the story.
It fit within its scope.
Right. I mean, they would do their daily routine and you could disrupt their daily routine and they would adapt to that. But when you actually went to get a quest, you still ended up in a dialogue tree.
I believe Oblivion did the same thing, didn't they?
Yeah, Oblivion kind of did the same thing. But once again, the story was pretty fixed.
Yeah.
And how the NPCs interacted with the world that had nothing to do with the story or the quests or the plot was very clunky. You know, they went to bed, they woke up, they went to a job. They went to dinner, then they went to bed.
Well, I remember in Oblivion, I went to one of the towns, and one of the nobles was going to give me a quest to kill all these vampires in a neighboring cave. Well, I stumbled across the cave on the way to the town, poked my nose in there, and I already killed all the vampires.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I hadn't sold the loot yet, so I still had on me the things to prove that I'd kill them. If I had sold my loot, I don't know what I would have done with that side quest.
I did something similar where I played a stealthy rogue, and my stealth ability was through the roof. And so I would go into a place, like the first thing I did when I hit a town is I walked in there and I robbed the entire town blind. And then I would do the quest. And so I went up to this guy and he's like, I want you to sneak into this office. I want you to get this thing out of the drawer. I want you to come back and give it to me. I'm like, okay. And then I took it out of my pocket and handed it to him.
Nice. But,
I would love to see a day where the artificial intelligence, you have these big breakthroughs, where the world itself, you can have a game that has the story depth of like one of the classic Final Fantasy games that is purely done on the fly. That when you create a character, you just don't pick his appearance and his skills. You pick his traits. You pick his background. You pick his personality quirks. And that based on that, you have this fluid world out there where you don't just have NPCs that wake up and go to work and make some kind of limited decisions, but maybe even the potential mastermind bad guys are making decisions about the world.
I think that's something that Fable wanted to do. It tried to do, planned on doing it, and it just didn't actualize for whatever various reasons.
Well, I think that would definitely add to replayability, because right now, if you go to a FAQ site, there is typically a complete and exhaustive list of all the side quests available in a game.
Mm-hmm.
And some games, based on your notoriety or your alignment, i.e. if you're a very noble or very evil character, may preclude you from certain branches of the decision tree.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is there's a finite number of branches to the decision tree, and you may have to replay the game as an evil character to get access to some of them. But once you play the game twice, once as a good guy, once as a bad guy, you've seen the bulk of the content.
Right. Now, let me ask you guys a question. Do you think that what we're asking for here, a plot that is driven by a sort of an AI where it's more fluid and dynamic, not nailed down to the traditional flowchart, do you think that that's something that can be done and the designers just aren't even trying to do it? Or do you think that this is something that's just currently outside the realm of possibility?
I'm going to say...
Well, you better sell down over there, Skynet.
I think, yes, it is possible. Now, I have to admit that, to a certain degree, this is based off of personal intuition more than anything I can back up with facts. And I have some examples to show you why I think this is true. But the ultimate final leap that can you make a game world that is truly fluid and dynamic, where when they put it out there, even the developers really cannot tell you what your game's going to be about.
And we're talking a game with a story, not something right. like The Sims.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not talking like Civilization or something like great games, but
yeah,
wrong.
Sims isn't a game.
We're talking, imagine like you could dive into a Final Fantasy game and the movies are generated on the fly based on the things you've done in the story.
The bad guy isn't the same guy every time.
Yeah,
but like the movie is the same, but depending on...
No, may not even... You walk into a town and you have a certain personality that you've built up over the course of the game and the NPCs... Like, for example, let's take one of the games where... let's take Final Fantasy X, just as one easy example, where the main character Tidus looks like another character, Waka's younger brother. And so as a result, Waka sort of takes this kind of older brother sort of protectorate view of him. Now imagine if you made a character that did not look like his brother. Maybe you looked like Lulu's dead father, for example. And the game would now roll with that. That it would kind of... And once again, I realize some of this, I've got to say, you know, it's just more intuition. I think it can be done. But as some real examples, let me offer you two things. The first thing is the game Creatures that was out several years ago, where you raised the
several,
little
several years ago.
Now, the thing about Creatures is with Creatures, they did not have a decision tree artificial intelligence. It was not a Boolean logic of if you do this, then this happens, and you walk down this little tree of you can do 1, 2, or 3, and then off of 1, you can do A or B, and off of 2, you can do C or D. Instead, they created each of the creatures to have sort of a genetic intelligence, that they had certain traits, and then because of those traits, they had certain drives, and then they did certain things to sate those drives. And as the drives went up and down or conflicted with each other, these would create fully dynamic actions that even the game's developers could not predict. In fact, they released little anecdotes about when they were playtesting the games, things happened they did not think the Norns were capable of. Like, one example they gave was that there were two of them that became strangely attached to each other. They would never be apart. And when one of them finally died from old age, the other one sat down beside it, and despite this massive hunger drive, starved to death because it would not leave the side of this dead Norn. It just sat there in complete depression, sobbing or whatever, until finally it also keeled over dead.
That's so sad.
Well, yeah, I mean, I realize who
what
really...
a downer. God, jerk. But I don't even want to talk anymore.
The point being that's another example. Last night when we were talking to my brother-in-law, Adam, about this, he mentioned that a friend of his runs a company that develops artificial intelligence for business logic and military applications.
And mobile nice. Weapons.
And he was talking about some of the things that these things are capable of doing, where like they can actually examine engines on the fly, identify defects, even if they before did not know what the engine entirely was like. Or were, you know, I have to think.
The robot's just been developed that the robot has a view of itself within its mind.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and then it could, when changes happen to the robot, i.e. damage, it identifies the damage, compares it to its healthy self, and then compensates around the damage.
If you guys will allow me to segue a little bit, of course, we're talking right now.
I think we just segued into robots. So right. Go ahead.
Well, we're talking about programmatically created content, which is content that's dynamically created each time you play the game. What do you guys think about user created content? I.e., when a game is released to the community, you give the members of the community a chance to create content.
Love it.
I have a limited view of it. I think it's great stuff, and users have produced some really cool things. Obviously, there's a lot of crap as well, but there's been some really cool stuff. But the problem with it is, what are you making? You're making content for an existing game. You still are not able to break the fundamental limitations of the current model of artificial intelligence or the current model of game flow.
Oh, I don't know, because people have taken Half-Life 2 and turned it into a racing game.
Well,
and they
turn
into a soccer game.
Yeah, well, but still, you're still using the same physics.
No,
yeah,
I think this is a wonderful thing, because going back to what we were saying earlier and then tying these two things together, Half-Life 2, their physics engine. Wow, it's just a physics engine. But you know what? They have to develop it sometime. Fable, wow, it wasn't that great. But you know what? They have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And then if you let the community start to edit it, you're only going to get more innovation based on that idea, and it's only going to get better.
And also, look at what they did with Half-Life 2. You take Half-Life 2's Havoc engine, which is the physics engine, which, again, isn't generating a story. Then you take Half-Life 2, and you turn it into Oblivion, which is what they did. Oblivion is Half-Life 2.
Well, which is true, but even Oblivion really didn't overcome the fundamental...
No, it still had problems, but it's a step up.
Yeah, it's a step forward.
You know, but look, for example, at the advances in graphics since Wasteland in the early 1980s versus the advances in storytelling and AI. You know,
they've gone down. In my opinion, they've gone down.
I agree. I think they've either gone down or at best remained the same. Nobody is spending their development dollars and hours on the artificial intelligence of storytelling. They're devoting them into, we have bigger explosions and more realistic physics and faster cars and more guns than ever before and so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, marketing's still going to rule the day in any endeavor. In fact, when we did our movie review, that was our consensus.
Yeah.
How often do they sacrifice the story to sell the movie?
You know what we said about this? We talked about how perhaps the answer to this was, on one hand, getting people who have a passion for that medium in there. They talked about getting people who love video games into the movie industry.
Community-created content.
Or getting people that love comic books into the movie industry, which is how you get the comics, or the good comic movies.
And we have a very good friend that all of us, well, except you haven't met her, Mike. But we have a very good friend. I don't want to mention her name because, I don't know, she might get embarrassed. But she wants to go into the video game business to write games because she, A, loves video games a lot, and B, thinks that the current level of writing and quality of video games is so low, she wants to contribute to write and make it rise.
Well, I think
she wants to produce good stuff.
With user-created content, you've got two major problems.
Oh, you guys even list the same way. Lord.
Well, the first major problem is that when I've gone through a lot of user-created content, a small percentage of it is truly good content.
Oh.
So I would love to see sort of a community voting system or something where you could actually rate content and have the good content percolate to the top.
I think there is. I think that it's a market system.
Well, and
I think that the bad stuff doesn't get played.
Counter-Strike.
But a tie into that would be also, what if somebody releases very offensive content? For example, they release a content where they, you know, make everybody look like a wiener or something.
It's out there and not many people play it.
I take a more of a social limitation on that. I mean, if it's stupid, nobody's going to play it.
Well, but
I'd play that for about 5 minutes for the humor factor, but then I'd probably move on.
Well, the other concern that I had, which somewhat ties in nicely to what Chad was talking about, is quite often very creative people that have wonderful ideas about stories or plots or characters don't necessarily have the technical skills to be able to translate their creative vision into bits and bytes.
You mean programmers can't communicate?
But you know what? I mean, to a large degree, this is something that I blame on the industry as a whole. That, and Texas is something we talked about over the phone a couple of weeks or a couple of months ago, was that it seems like there are a lot of fast tracks to get new programming blood into the video game industry. But if you take someone out there who loves video games, but cannot program a single line of code, but has a brilliant mind for storytelling and storyboarding and character development, all these kinds of things. There is no easy way for this person to get involved in the industry. Yeah. That the people that they use to do those things tend to be existing programmers, people that were already in the community. It's very hard for someone who just writes books, for example, to jump in and do that. And I know there are examples. Yeah, I mean, I know, for example, you've got Tom Clancy and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I know there are examples, but I'm painting with a broad brush here.
Well, you know what, too? This reminds me of something I saw on Slashdot.
That's right. I used a figure of speech.
That was when I forgot.
It was an ask Slashdot question. This guy was like, I want to get into making video games. I have a bachelor's degree in programming. I'm going to go on to my master's degree. What should I go for? Should I get a CS degree? Should I get a college is offering a gaming degree? Should I get that? All of them were, all the responses, like the majority of them was like, I work in the gaming industry. I'm a developer. You need to get this mathematics degree, this engineering degree, this sort of, you know, you need to take these math and engineering, which is great. I mean, that's what programming is. Don't get me wrong. Not a single one of them, at least in my mod level, said anything about get an English degree, get a, you know, a literature degree, get a writing degree.
Well, game learn programming
how to tell
doesn't
a story.
Game programming doesn't imply game design. Game programming implies game coding.
That's true, but I think that the majority of people who work on a video game are the developers. I think that the developers design the games. I know I could be wrong, and I probably am wrong with a lot of games, but I think for the most part, I think the developers design the game.
Well, you know, some of my favorite moments in some video games are when I see a user who's done something truly creative. You know, for example, I play EverQuest 2, and everybody in the game gets an apartment that you could decorate however you want. And most apartments tend to be very Spartan or tend to just, you know, be somewhat programmatic.
But, place to dump the stuff.
Yeah, every once in a while I'll walk in and somebody will have done something really creative with their apartment that I had never thought of. Mm-hmm. And I just stop and I stand there for a couple minutes and just enjoy what they did that I'd never thought of before. And I think that also kind of in a way adds replayability because every time I walk into an apartment, I don't know what I'm going to find.
You know, talking about user-generated content, I wanted to take this kind of to a deeper level. And I wanted to talk about something that they are doing not currently with the Xbox, and I hope to see this brought eventually to other platforms, which is this XNA project. And XNA is apparently, as best as I understand it, I've never personally used it, is a series of, it's like programming architecture. It's something kind of like a Visual Studio for video game development. Is that about right?
Yeah, if I had to sum it up in a sentence, I would describe it as Visual Studio for games.
Okay.
Sweet.
Well, and one of the neat things that this allows is for users, end users, people that are not involved in the gaming industry, to step in and to create their own video games. And I think the limitation of this is some of the level of sophistication that's going to be needed for what I'm looking forward to in the future of gaming. I don't think two guys sitting around their living room are simply going to have the time on their hands to do.
But I don't think that you're going to see what you want and what I want in video games. I don't think you're going to see it in this generation, the next generation, possibly in
your
maybe
lifetime,
third generation. I know. Well, it's a pretty steep pinnacle to climb when you're talking about dynamic, artificially created by the game, storylines and plots that will actually engage the player.
I think that they can, technically, I think that they can do it. It's just not a focus. It's not a priority.
I don't know. I think that may be mechanically challenging to have programmatically created quests, but I think one thing that we could see as more reality if we tapped into it better is user-created content.
Right.
Because I know even if only 1% of the users try to create content, and even if only 1% of that is good, that's still more content than all the game development studio staff combined could make.
Neverwinter Nights was like that. That was a crappy game. Some of those mods were cool. Yeah.
And I think one thing that the video game industry needs to do is find a way to engage the good members of the community that want to create innovative and interesting content that's not just vulgar.
Yeah.
You know, something I would probably like to throw in here is I do realize that what I'm talking about here in terms of the changes of the AI this is great, vast oversimplification, and I realize this. What I'm bemoaning is not the fact that no one is releasing a game tomorrow that has my Skynet AI in it. What I'm saying...
I am.
What I'm bemoaning is the fact that it doesn't seem like anyone is making great strides in that direction.
Yeah, nobody's really going in that direction. Everyone is sticking to the... You walk down the box canyon approach to gaming.
Right, and it's the most realistically rendered perfect box canyon in the world, but it's just the fact that it seems like no one's even really trying, that you may very rarely get some little mention of AI on a byline of a real-time strategy game, and that's really about it.
It's mainly combat, bots, and then, like you said, strategy game, the enemy coming towards you. That's all they're doing with AIs in video
games. Well, some games have tried to take it to another level with more advanced decision trees. I mean, the most simple one is just simple decision trees, and then as your character gets alignment or notoriety, you begin to eliminate options. But I remember Baldur's Gate and Knights of the Old Republic 2 both gave members of your party also alignments, and that if you conducted yourself in a way that they thought was appropriate based on their personality, they would be more willing to give you information or perhaps help you more. Yeah. And so you actually had to think about it. Like if I was going to do, you know, a somewhat nefarious deed, it might be in my best interest to take some of the more sneaky, dirty members of the party with me who would approve of that. Where if I was going to go, donate my weekend to build an orphanage, it would behoove me more to take the good aligned members of the party with me.
KOTOR 1 did that. Now, I never played KOTOR 2, but KOTOR 1 had a really neat scene where I played a bad guy, and there was one guy in the party who was kind of in the middle as far as the alignment thing went, but tending towards good. And as I did these evil things and tried to play the really super evil character, he began questioning more and more, and then it got to a boiling point to where he stopped and he said, I can no longer do this. And he didn't leave the party. He attacked me. And it was this epic fight. And it was this really neat sort of plot point that was entirely created by my decisions to be the bad guy.
So, and that's kind of, towards what I would like to say.
It was something in the right direction.
But there's such little steps, given how long in the making.
I want to see harnessed is the power of community. Because as I said, even if only 1% of 1% of people make great content, that is going to be a huge multiplier to the amount of content available. And I really believe in the power of communities. I mean, for example, with this podcast, in a very short time, you've developed a fairly large fan base that's very vocal and very active and participates.
We've gone from 3 to 5. We're rocking.
As we were talking earlier, sometimes, somebody has a talent in making graphics, or somebody has a talent in programming, or maybe somebody's a very creative storyteller. And the days of the single-person written game are pretty much over. I mean, tools like XNA can make game development easier. But one thing I would like to see is a way to create a community where we can get people that make really good storyboards and bring them into contact with people that can do really good graphics and really good audio and really good world design.
Mm-hmm. I think this allows it, but I guess one of the things that I've seen, and this is purely argument from anecdote, but the people that I know that are...
There's another one I forgot.
The people... That's a logical fallacy. That's not an axiom or a little figure of speech. It's a logical fallacy.
How many times you said that in the last 3 episodes?
Uh-huh.
yeah, I thought so.
The people that I know that are into doing these small shop game developments, typically the person who is originating all the creative ideas is also the lead programmer. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I fully accept there are people out there who can program and also have great creative ideas. So I'm not creating some sort of stereotypical separation between the creative and the technical. What I'm saying is that, once again, what I do not see is people that are willing to donate their time saying, you know what, I've got all this great technical skill, but I can't tell a story. I need someone who's creative. And the industry as a whole just doesn't seem inclined to go that direction, to really focus their energy there.
Well, they may be a little bit gun-shy, because if you look at some of the attempts to adapt existing great stories into video games, a la video games based on books and or movies,
Rainbow Six was good.
I would submit to you that the majority of video games based on movies have not translated well.
No.
I agree.
I completely agree.
well, so
there have been some good ones, but yes, I generally agree.
Well, I think that that's because those video games fall victim to the game design by marketing department, not because the concept of Batman, a movie video game based on that, or the Hulk or whatever, is too difficult, but because it is designed to be a commercial. It's designed to help promote the movie.
I partially disagree that I think there is definitely a difference between someone who has a great talent in storytelling in a linear media. For example, I'm going to write a story for a book, and you're going to start at page one and you're going to end at page 300. Or I'm going to write a story for a movie that you're going to watch the start, the middle, and the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. Those are linear media where I have a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Where when we're talking about something that's interactive, the ability to create an interesting and dynamic and engaging world that can be interacted with in multiple different ways is a very different form of storytelling. I mean, for example, is a good game master necessarily a good novel writer, or vice versa?
Yeah. No.
I don't know if I entirely agree with that, but the only examples I can give are the few exceptions of good video game to movie translations. Like, everyone knows I'm not a big Star Wars fan, but I think the Star Wars video games are great. Most of them, not all of them, but most of them are really good.
Oh, come on, Pod Racer?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing about that, though.
And different ones, too.
Very few of the Star Wars games have you playing through the movies.
Right.
Most of them, X-Wing, TIE Fighter,
KOTOR,
Galactic Battlegrounds, yep. Galactic Battlefront,
Dark Jedi Forces. Academy.
Yeah, all these things.
Jedi Knight.
They're just using the universe and telling a new story.
But you're not playing Jedi a Golf. Main character from the movie.
Yeah, there are, yes, and those games are out there, but most of the Star Wars games I'm thinking of aren't like that. I remember playing the Spider-Man 2 PlayStation video game.
Sweet Spider-Man.
And you know what? The best parts of the game, because they really kind of had two plots running through the game. One was the plot of the movie about Dr. Octopus and his great big fusion machine, and the other one was one they had completely invented that mostly centered around Mysterio. And the one that they completely invented was some really excellent gameplay, and I just cringed every time they pushed me back into the movie plot. It was so forced, it was so mechanical, it was so just, you knew exactly where this was headed.
Well, I agree that I think me acting out a movie script for a movie that I've already seen is not a very engaging activity at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember somebody describing to me one of the many Lord of the Rings games, and it was like one of the direct movie ones.
Where
and
you're just acting out the plot.
Yeah, you are acting out the plot, and it's just like where Sam and Frodo go up the tower in they're in Moria. I'm not an expert
Mordor.
In this. Mordor. And they go up to the top of the tower, and in the movie, they fought one orc. They fought and killed one orc, and they were able to escape and move on. Well, because it's a video game, same exact thing, same tower, only now there's six orcs to make it a challenge. And then they fight them and move on.
Frodo was already at the top of the tower. He was knocked out from the poison from the big spider.
I understand.
Now just to poke one of Dan's buttons.
Oh, sweet. He needs to be more belligerent.
Yes. How does that differ from a very linear narrative role-playing game, which I know you're a big fan of that genre?
Well, let me differentiate here between linear games and true storyteller games. And here's how I'm defining the differences. With a linear game, we're talking about a game that the game master intends to move in one direction. Typically, those games just don't work. I mean, that's what this podcast is about, is someone in the party will break it. Because unlike in a video game, it's not like when the game master says you walk into a bar, a little dialogue pops up in midair over the table with three options and you have to press one. Somebody's going to say, I turn around and walk out of the bar because this place is crap.
No, the door's closed and locked and you can't open it and there's no other way out.
I walk north
That brings up the second kind of game, the storyteller game, where effectively you just sit there and nod while the storyteller walks you through the plot. And those kinds of games, in my mind, are terrible. The stories may be great. They may be wonderful. But if you're going to tell a story, tell a story.
Yeah.
Why do I have this character sheet if you're going to tell me what happens at every turn? If you're not going to let me walk the other direction. So I would say, here's the thing, is when we play a video game, we kind of have, it's like when you watch TV. You just understand you can't affect what's going on. That even though the horror movie would have been 5 minutes long if the dumb bitch would have pulled the trigger in the first scene, you just accept that that's not going to happen because you need a 90-minute movie. And in video games, you just accept that when you walk into the bar, your options are help him, don't help him, kill him. renegotiate just isn't on the list, and nobody really gets upset about that.
So are you saying that, for example, in a narrative or JRPG type game, you actually find it more liberating knowing that you're not going to have any choice in the plot development, being as opposed to be giving a few cheesy options?
I don't know,
or
that
superficial
I don't know that I describe it as liberating. I describe it as an economic choice, because if you decide to introduce even simple options, you have now created a plot that must branch and must respond in some way to the choices you have made along that branch. And therefore, what immediately happens, and here out of this, you get what we've been calling an American-style RPG or computer RPG, where suddenly your plot's more flexible, but all of the characters and all of the plot elements are less deep, less colorful, less nuanced, because you can't guarantee what the person's been doing.
Although I think the middle ground is the worst of all, which is where they give you choices, but they're truly superficial choices, where you have to make a choice, but no matter which choice you pick, you're going to end up at the same next point.
And Wing Commander.
And then all the characters you interact with, because you can't vary away from all the characters aren't deep, though. It's the middle ground. They kind of dumb everything down.
Well, I know in some of Dan's favorite games, you know, you go into dialogue scenes, but you basically have no choice. You're just listening to the dialogue.
Yeah, you put the controller down and you watch
the
movie.
For like a what you're calling Japanese RPG, the Final Fantasy type games, it's an interactive story. It's not a role-playing game in the sense of guys sitting around the table and a game master has a story in his mind and then the players or the characters, but they interact with the story and move it in a direction with the game master together that neither party 100% expected to go there. When I sit down for a Japanese-style RPG video game, it is a story that I have characters in, and the story is like a ride. I put my characters in this ride, and it goes forth, and I want to see where the story will take these characters.
Well, to play devil's advocate, so does that mean the only difference between a narrative role-playing game and a movie game adaptation of a feature film is you already know the ending?
I think that's partially it.
But the gameplay isn't fun in those games.
I guess
it's tedious.
Exactly.
Did you play the Lord of the Rings translations where it was just...
You're slogging to... You're slogging...
XXX. It's just Diablo. Yeah.
You're slogging through to an end you already know.
Well, here's the thing. Nobody wants to buy a 90-minute video game. Especially when we're talking about a role-playing game. We're not talking about a racing game or something. Nobody wants a 90-minute game.
That's true. Most major games are expected to have a bare minimum of 20 hours of gameplay.
Right. So you have to add in this massive amount of tedium just to make it... So suddenly the 20-minute trip through the Death Star now suddenly becomes a 3.5-hour slog.
Yeah, it's like,
but there are stormtroopers there.
There are stormtroopers, and then when you get to the door has a door lock that you zoom into, and then you do the door lock puzzle.
I like the picklocking puzzle from Oblivion. Thank you.
Okay, that is really good, but except my mouse didn't work right, and never mind. I don't even want to get into that. My problem with a lot of role-playing games is the puzzle aspect. Puzzle games are okay, and some people, like Adam...
I love puzzle games.
Yeah, very, very into games that are all about the puzzles. I'm more into the story and characters and a little bit into the combat and such. When I get to a puzzle, if I can't solve it within 10, 15, 20 minutes, I'm looking at an FAQ. Because I want to get...
I'm with you.
I want to get past this door... That is actually a weird Rubik's Cube.
That's standing in the way of my story.
Story. Now, if the puzzle is more of the story where you go talk to people, and this person wants you to do this, and this person, to do this, you have to find this guy's cat, and, you know, just weird thing where you it's more interactive and the puzzle, I guess, is hidden. It's still there. It's still a puzzle. You're just interfacing with it in a different way. But if it's more story and more real, more... squishy. I don't know.
Well, if we want to go back to the Final Fantasy games, I don't play the Final Fantasy games for the story.
Yeah.
Principally, I play it for the combat aspect of the games.
Really?
Yes, really.
Wow.
You're talking to the guy who has spent the 99 plus hours on Final Fantasy VII to beat all the weapons, although the rewards are the weapons that you have to use to kill the weapons. I did that for 7, 8, 9, and I did most of it for 10. But...
And, you know, I can't appreciate that. I'm not into it the level that Adam is, but I appreciate the building a character up in a video game. I hate this for a tabletop, social, people, real-life role-playing game. But in a video game where all that tedium is automated, I like the idea of building a character up and then overcoming the challenge, a combat challenge of a monster, and maybe using tactics and strategies. I mean, that's why I love MMOs so much. MMOs are very flat. They're very flat as far as their storyline goes. And, you know, they don't offer you anything what a real role-playing game does. It's a lot of combat, a lot of grinding, but you build a character up, all the crunchy stuff is automated for me, and then you get together with your friends, and you meet and overcome a challenge in different ways using different strategies, and I really like that, and you get to interact with people. That's why I really, really like MMOs. Not well, because of the story's great, because you're usually not.
Well, speaking of creating a character in a video game, this is just a pet peeve of mine. I was curious how you guys felt about it. You go to create your character, and one thing you do is you spend a great length of time making the character's face, right?
No.
You can choose skin color and eye color, and you can adjust the position of their nose, the position of their mouth.
But you only ever see the back of their head.
Well, and either you only see the back of their head, or the minute you get one piece of armor, you put a bucket on their head.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Well, that's one of the great things that EQ1 had, is and it was really simplistic, but at least in EQ1, you could color your armor. So at least you had some level of customization.
Well, I'll tell you this. City of Heroes. I borrowed that game from a friend of mine. I used his account. He wanted to get me into it, so I made a character on his account, was just seeing it, see if I liked it. I spent an hour making my character. And I don't mean picking out the stats and character class. That takes 5 minutes. I spent over an hour individually moving my face around, the hair color and stuff. I made a guy who looked exactly like me, only he was a muscular, because you couldn't not be muscular.
And apparently he was hideous, too.
He was damn fine. So, anyway, I make a guy who...
Oh, Carla, you ruined the podcast.
Way to go. So, anyway, I make a guy who looks exactly like me. I have a lot of fun doing it, and then I get dropped down onto to the world, go through the tutorial, go into the game. Game was boring to me. It's not a bad game, it just wasn't my cup of tea. But I wish World of Warcraft, because as everyone knows, I'm a big World of Warcraft player, I wish World of Warcraft had that level of customization.
You know
nice.
What?
Bonus episode!
I threw that cup because of a great deal of excitement I have building up within me. Because I think, and I wish I had come to this conclusion before, because I would have led the episode off this way rather than wrapping it up this way. But I think I just figured out what my real beef is. Because we've talked about AI and all these different things. And I sat here kind of drumming my fingers, say, you know, we pontificate a lot, but with the exception of one of us, none of us work within the role-playing or the video game industry. You know, we don't really know exactly what goes on, or maybe we're even underestimating some of the tasks at hand or whatever. So I was trying to think, what really is my complaint here? What is it really I've come up with what it is.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think that you have a complaint. I think that you really enjoy video. I know you really enjoy video games. You want them to be better. And that's not a complaint.
That's true. But
I think black could be anywhere.
That is true
what,
as well.
What Chad said is absolutely true, that despite all these things I'm saying, I love video games, enjoy playing them, I want them to be better. But I think I came up with... I do have a specific complaint.
Okay.
Which is... And you talking about City of Heroes is what made me think of this. My complaint with the video game is I cannot pick who I am.
Right.
That when I enter the world, I may be able to pick what I look like, I may be able to pick my stats and my class and my race, but ultimately when that plot begins, I am whoever that game wants me to be. And even in a sandbox game like Oblivion, I still, relatively, I mean, I may have some options, but the plot is moving one direction.
Well, look at, well, even in like, wow, my character Fuente. What's the first thing you think of when you think of Fuente?
He's a big, bald black man.
That's right. Because nobody plays a black guy in World of Warcraft. So, I made a black guy. And he is a big, bald black man. And that I have had people who know me, complete strangers, people I party with, like, people whispering, are you black?
What?
Like, yeah, people did.
That's disgusting.
Are you not black? A wizard either.
Well, yeah. You know, there's a similar thing with
bald,
my WoW character. That with my WoW character, when
are
I
you
bring
a dwarf?
Up, well, the first thing everybody brings up is the pink flamingo.
Yeah,
because my hunter has a pink tall strider pet, and of course tall striders unusual pets, and of course now I have a named one which is pink, and of course that has absolutely nothing to do with if I'm talented or skillful or if I know how to play my class or if I'm a loot whore.
But it personalizes
it. It personalizes it. It's like, oh, he's the guy with the pink flamingo.
There are 10,000 mages. Very few of them are black and bald. That makes me stand out. Tex, there are many, many hunters. You're probably one of that handful of people on our server who is a pink flamingo. And with a game with millions of players, it's interesting to stand out.
And imagine if when you came into Oblivion, you could choose to say, you know what? Instead of a prisoner who has to save the king, I want to be the...
A king who's saved by the prisoner.
Yeah, or I want to be a best friend of a nobleman in a neighboring city who's getting involved in this because the nobleman's concerned about the about Patrick Stewart's character.
Is there any nudity?
And that's
not without third-party mods.
I really think that is nice. What gets me about these games. It's I cannot decide who I am in these games. The game thrusts me into a role and may give me freedom within that role, but fundamentally it has already dictated to me who I am.
That's another reason why I like MMOs, because when you create a character, there's absolutely no history behind them whatsoever.
You sprung forth from the earth as literally, number one.
You literally spring forth from the earth, and of my four main characters, I have a couple of side characters, the four main ones I have, in my mind, I have a whole history behind them, where they came from, who they are, and it's just stuff that... Adam is shaking his head because he hates role-playing games.
You're disgusting.
Oh, but Jesus.
It's not exactly like fanfic or anything that I write down or make a big deal about, or I role-play, because I'm not in a role-play server.
Right.
But when you're going from point A to point B on a long griffin ride, you think, where did this guy come from?
I just make a backstory like that Just it entertains me.
I can already imagine where this is going. Fuente looks down on Bran MacMorn, his rugged dwarf features and that long
and he
beard.
Thinks, wow, dwarfs are just the right height.
All right, at that piece of brilliance, we're going to wrap this show up. So thanks again for tuning in, and we will catch you guys again for the next regular episode.
See ya.